From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, you're good. You're so kind. We got a great show for you today. We got actor Liev Schreiber from the movie Wolverine. He's going to be joining us later on. We're excited about that. Yeah. Before we begin, though, this week, just a warning. It just so happens, I happen to have a bad cold this week, and I just wanted you to know, oh, wow. I've never seen 500 audience members simultaneously back away. That was... Hello? Okay, well, you can't transmit anything down a phone wire but your voice. So give us a call, the number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Tisha Temple from San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, Tisha, how are you?
I'm good.
What do you do there in San Antonio?
I'm actually a study abroad advisor.
A study abroad advisor? People come to you and they want to study abroad. You tell them where to go?
Pretty much.
That's cool.
We've been steering them away from Mexico. But,
yeah. Well, Tisha, great to have you with us. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and the author of the forthcoming book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Tisha.
Next, the woman behind the syndicated column Ask Amy and an author of the memoir The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Amy.
Hey, Tisha.
And finally, writer, director, and comedian and bon vivant, Mr. Paul Provenza.
Hello, Tisha. How are you?
I'm good.
Tisha, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time?
Okay.
Carl Castle right here going to recreate for you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice and your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Okay.
All right. For your first quote, everybody brace yourself for the Vice President of the United States.
I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now. It's not that you're going to Mexico. It's you're in a confined aircraft. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft.
So that was Joe Biden. He was kind of stepping on his boss's message of don't panic when he was advising Americans on how to deal with what?
The H1N1 swine flu.
Oh, she's Whoa. Good. Oh, she's good.
Whoa.
Well, whatever it's called, America is going nuts about it. So the Obama administration tried to calm the waters. They told us just, you know, be careful, just wash your hands, take normal precautions, don't worry. Then Joe Biden went on the Today Show on Thursday. And he said, well, here I will try to summarize the famously long-winded Veep. He said, ah! We're going to die! Now, the White House, this is great. After Biden told everybody, don't travel on planes, don't travel in subways, don't get anywhere with other people, the White House immediately clarified the comment. They said that he said exactly the opposite of what he actually said. It's as if they were not aware of the invention of videotape, you know? Like, we can replay it, guys, but no.
Okay, but don't you love how out of control he is? It's because, like, President Obama is so controlled and so careful, and Joe Biden is just, is like the annoying little brother, you know?
Yeah. No, he's more like the drunk uncle at the wedding, actually.
Pull my finger, yeah.
Later on Thursday, the administration announced that Mr. Biden had to leave the country to attend the funeral of the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key. And was pointed out that Mr. Key had not died. The White House said, well, he was looking a little pale, so they were sending Biden there to wait it out.
How was he going to get there in an unconfined space?
He was going to ride in the wing. Yeah. All right, very good. Here is your next quote, Tisha.
I am a Republican, and I'm going to run on the Republican ticket in the Republican primary.
That was somebody speaking just a couple of weeks ago, saying, no way, no how, never, no way, would he switch parties and become a Democrat? Who switched parties and became a Democrat this week?
That would be Arlen Specter.
Yes, wow. He's a Republican senator for 30 years. But he saw which way the wind was blowing, mainly toward doing Viagra ads next to Bob Dole. He realized he couldn't win in a Republican primary, so he decided to become a Democrat. His press conference about this switch was very refreshing. On the one hand, he told the honest truth about his motives. On the other hand, the honest truth was that he was willing to betray all his friends to save his skin. The Democrats, as you would expect, were delighted, as this means they're that much closer to the unstoppable 60-vote majority. Republicans were also delighted because, although they are sliding closer to oblivion, at least in oblivion, they will not have to listen to Arlen Specter. Interesting things about Arlen Specter. I did not know this until this week. He started as a Democrat. He was a Democrat back in the 60s. And he switched to the Republicans for the same reason, because he couldn't win the Democratic primary, so he became Republican. here's another little bit of trivia, and this is true. Kennedy assassination conspiracists are all very upset about the single bullet theory. This is the idea that one bullet managed to kill JFK and end up in the car and hit John Connolly. That was Arlen Specter who came up with that.
Which explains why suddenly he went back and to the left.
And then and to the left.
Tisha, here is your last quote.
We are celebrating 100 days of America going down the drain.
That was Fox News' Sean Hannity earlier this week giving his interpretation of all the buzz surrounding what?
President Obama's 100 days in office.
Yes, it was, as many said, a Hallmark holiday made up to sell news magazines, you know. Fake hype. But just like Valentine's Day, everybody is too scared not to go along with it. The White House decided to embrace it with the president holding a press conference to describe his accomplishments, passing the stimulus bill, passing a new budget, bailing out the auto industry, causing the sun to pass through the skies exactly 100 times since his miraculous advent. For the next 100 days, Obama has promised to start on health care reform, and he has also said he will cause our crops to grow and provide us with a bountiful harvest. Carl, how did Tisha do in our game?
Tisha was great, Peter. Tisha, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Tisha, congratulations.
Thank you.
100 days, 100 nights to know a man's heart. 100 days.
Panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, on Thursday, the president announced that Chrysler Corporation will declare bankruptcy with the government's help. This is not a surprise, especially, in fact, to Chrysler. When their headquarters building was created in the late 1980s, bosses at Chrysler had it designed so that they could do what with it?
Get in a helicopter and go to Brazil.
No, not exactly right.
Sell it, I would imagine, or sell it for parts.
Even more inventive and clever. They were looking forward.
It would collapse.
No?
At a moment's notice.
I'll give you a hint.
Poof.
Pull a string and the whole
place
goes. No, the executive boardroom, for example, we split into an Orange Julius and a Gap.
Oh, they could sell it off. That's what I said. They sell it off for parts. They can turn it into a mall.
They're going to turn it into a mall. But here's the thing. It was designed specifically so that it could be converted into a shopping mall in case of bankruptcy. This is how clever they were.
Because shopping malls are in such great shape.
Well, that was the flaw in their thinking. If you go
They should have made it easy to turn into a Toyota dealership, really.
If you go to the Chrysler headquarters in Auburn Hills, Michigan, you'll note that with its big cross-shaped floor plan and its large atriums, it looks a lot like a shopping mall. This is not a bug, but a feature. When the building was designed in the 1980s, according to Business Week, Chrysler realized the company may not survive, and so, like a kind of transformer robot that doesn't move, they made a building that could be turned into a shopping mall simply by removing the incompetent, overpaid CEOs and installing a bunch of Cinnabons.
But, you know, I heard they said that if you buy the building and then you lose your job.
Oh, guaranteed.
Right.
Yeah.
Paul, your heartwarming story about how people are coping with adversity in these tough economic times. A New York marketing firm called Go Guerrilla Media came up with the brilliant idea of selling advertising space on what?
The back of pink slips.
No. That's a good idea, though.
It's not a bad idea, actually.
Bad news, you're fired. Good news, coupon for Dunkin' Donuts. Just turn it over, babe.
I don't know why they don't consult with me.
I'll give you a hint. It will both prevent infection and make you a, quote, brand ambassador.
I'm completely stumped.
Anybody know?
A surgical mask?
Yes, exactly. Those surgical masks that everybody's wearing because of the swine flu. They want to put ads.
The cool kids
Their idea was to put ads in the front of them. You see?
Aero Mexico.
Exactly. For example. Well, have you ever looked at those surgical masks that people are wearing out of panic over getting swine flu and said, now there's a revenue stream waiting to be tapped? Go Guerrilla Media did. They pitched to their clients, quote, an opportunity to contribute to consumers' health while at the same time getting their message across in a lively, fun, and sure-to-be-talked-about way, unquote. The idea was, in fact, talked about because the CEO of GoGorilla sent out an apology email just a few hours later. He said, quote, in hindsight, the concept was not as clever as I had originally thought, unquote.
You know, that could fly if the picture changes as your temperature goes up.
Yeah. GoGorilla's next big idea, putting your brand and your logo on the yellow tape police use at crime scenes. Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brad Cruz from Oak Park Heights, Minnesota.
Oak Park Heights, Minnesota. Where is that?
It's right on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border.
I see. So you can choose from either Wisconsin or Minnesota depending on your mood.
Correct. Or the public radio station that I want to listen to.
Exactly. You can go across and back. Wisconsin's good for cheese and Minnesota is good for...
leaving to go buy cheese.
Exactly. Brad, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Brad's topic?
If there's a gibbous moon, harvest your soybeans in a counterclockwise direction.
Now, the Farmer's Almanac has provided farmers and laypeople tips on everything from when to harvest their crops to the best way to trim your horse's mustache. But this week, we read a story that the editors of the Almanac forgot to include. Our panelists are going to tell you three bits of wisdom left out of the Farmer's Almanac. Choose that true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
All right. First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
Peter, if there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alarmed now. It's just a flock of Mormon crickets. And like many things Mormon, they breed. The town of Tuscarora, Nevada, has discovered a new technique for ridding itself of the annual plague of shield-back katydids, or Mormon crickets, huge flightless insects that invade the town every year in battalions. For the past few years, the 13 citizens of Tuscarora have discovered that the music of Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones will drive the bugs to distraction, not to mention the next town. Hammer of the gods! See, it works. So the citizens put speakers out on their lawns, crank up the local classic rock station, and let it blast. It works better than garden hoses, chalk dust, and dishwashing soap, all other remedies that have been tried. It's part of our arsenal, said Laura Moore, a resident of Tuscarora. However, the strategy may be waning in effectiveness. Several young crickets were seen carving strange Celtic runes into their exoskeletons and banging their heads together.
Good people of a small town in Utah using classic rock, Led Zeppelin, and Rolling Stones to drive off the crickets. Your next almanac advisory comes from Amy Dickinson.
Garden slugs are useful critters. Sure, they make decent fish bait, and we all know they're tasty on a Triscuit. But now a farmer outside Joplin, Missouri claims they're also excellent weather forecasters. For the past 15 years, local farmer Clyde Danz has been measuring the length and testing the elasticity of his slugs, using pails full of Pilsner beer as bait. He's gathered slugs and stretched them to their full length before breaking and measured their slime trails. And now the slugs have spoken. Farmer Danz released data showing his slugs successfully predicted global warming years before Al Gore. I'd hold my slugs up against any fancy pants scientist, but they won't let me, he said. And you can do this at home. This summer, it's going to be hot and dry.
Slugs. Predicting the weather in a way that only slugs can. Your next story that should have been in the almanac but isn't comes from Paul Prevenza.
Jet lag vexes travelers all over the world, but scientists at Japan's Kyoto University have devised a simple folk remedy, if you will, that costs nothing but a little pride. Jet lag manifests physically, but is essentially psychological, said Dr. Hiroshi Nakamura. Your body is in one time zone, but your experience and interactions are in another. Essentially, your mind and body are in dissonance and confusing one another. According to his study, the simple solution is to confuse them full circle. From the moment you get out of your airplane seat, he says, walk backwards. Off the plane, to the bag claim, to the taxi. If you take a train, take a seat facing the back of the train. The mind knows you've moved forward in time, so moving physically backwards through space compensates mentally. The longer you keep moving backwards, the less jet lag you suffer. Time and space end up, in a sense, meeting in the middle. I can only wonder what can happen if you read Hebrew at the same time, he said, only half-jokingly.
All righty then. Here are your choices. Let me put it this way. You should do, or you could do, any one of these things. You could, from Charlie Pierce, use loud rock music by Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stones and other bands like that to drive away Mormon crickets. You could use slugs, garden slugs, to predict the weather. Or you could cure jet lag simply by walking backwards for the rest of your trip. Which of these is a real bit of folk wisdom that might actually work?
I really like Charlie Pierce's story, partly because I just want to see the entire town on the edge of the city holding up boomboxes like and Say Anything.
Right.
Peter Gabriel songs blasting.
I know. So your choice then is Charlie's story about the rock and roll and the Mormon crickets. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to an expert on this topic.
Their theory is that the vibrations the crickets don't like, and therefore they move away from the music.
That was Jeff Knight, state entomologist in the Nevada Department of Agriculture. You were correct. Charlie had the right answer. Although, I do want to recommend that everybody listening immediately start trying Paul's idea for jet lag, because it would be funny.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You've earned a point for Charlie, and you have won our game. You have won Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Very much.
And now the game where we like to invite distinguished people on to answer questions about things they don't know anything about because they were busy distinguishing themselves. Every comic book hero needs a larger-than-life villain, and the most successful comic book movies always rely on the same secret weapon. The villain is a Shakespearean actor. Joining us now is the only man ever to play Hamlet at New York's Public Theater and a mutant murderer with fangs and claws in the new movie X-Men Origins Wolverine, Mr. Liev Schreiber. Welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you.
Great to have you. People have asked, and I know in other interviews, of how you go from doing very serious theater to doing large movies. I assume you do it because it's fun. But I wanted to ask you if it helps to do one and then the other.
Well, I don't think they're that different, actually. I mean, the sort of range of character and scope of these comic book movies, particularly the X-Men series, is pretty Shakespearean.
Yes.
I mean, I think that the thing I'm doing in this movie reminds me a lot of The Bastard from Lear.
Right. And he, of course, is... Because in this version of the story, you play Sabretooth.
Yes.
Yes. who is Wolverine's half-brother.
Yes.
And is the evil brother of the two.
Yes.
I can hear your fangs grow even as you
yes.
even as you talk about this.
No, I was just so happy you didn't say Snagglepuss.
A fine Shakespearean actor in his own right, by the way.
I think so. I've never heard that comparison, though.
Exunt. Stage left.
Stage left.
I can't believe I never squeezed that in.
Wait a minute, you're telling me that you'll do the same process when you're preparing, say, Hamlet's mad scene, as when you're preparing to do a big fight with Hugh Jackman on a soundstage in Australia?
Well, I mean, Shakespeare, by comparison, is a hell of a lot easier.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How so?
Well, it's all there.
No CGI.
No green screen.
Well, first of all, there's no green screen. And also, you're not going to quibble with the writing.
Ha ha ha!
It saves hours of discussion every day, doesn't it?
So in the movie, those of us who have seen you in other movies that you've done are surprised, well, and put this bluntly, by how large you appear to be in the movie. So you had to do the whole training thing and bulk up to do the superhero-ish type role.
Yeah, that's sort of the prerequisite for the mutant world.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have to, like, sign up for that thing when you said, okay, I'm going to go and train and get all big and bulgy like Hugh Jackman?
I tried to avoid it initially, and I went to my first wardrobe fitting, and they had a muscle suit for me. And
you mean like that's a little humane.
Padded suit to make you look...
I've been looking for one of those for years.
Yeah. That's a little humiliating.
It was a little humiliating, so I thought that I ought to give it a try.
Right.
And fortunately, I had a very, very well-versed cast in Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds and Taylor Kitsch, who sort of, that collectively look like the New York Giants. And they showed me how to do it.
Really? And was it hard? Was it difficult?
It was awful. You ever done anything like that?
No, never in my life.
No, it's awful. I mean... If the weightlifting doesn't get you, which is extraordinarily unpleasant, the high protein diet just makes you completely unbearable to be around.
Wow.
When it was done, did you say, aha, I have transformed my body and now a picture of health and now I shall continue? Or did you say, thank God, that's over, I'm going to go back to the donuts and the lying around?
It wasn't donuts. I was in Australia, so it was straight to the chip shop.
Really? You didn't keep it up.
No, I think it's better for an actor to stay in a neutral state.
I understand.
That's just my personal.
I can dig it.
That's my excuse. Yeah.
I'm staying in a neutral state.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Were you worried when you took on this comic book role? Because as we all know, the comic book fan community is very, very, very dedicated and stubborn and shall we say particular. Were you afraid that you get buttonholed by fans saying, now Sabretooth would never do that?
Yes. Well, it did happen. But generally, all they really cared about was that I was big.
Really? So that's all they cared about?
That seemed to be the biggest problem. Well, that and some people called me nerdy and cerebral. But I couldn't really change the nerdy and cerebral thing, and I could work on the big thing.
And you could beat the crap out of them.
Exactly.
Later.
Well, now I could.
Now you can. Yeah. We understand that you had an odd upbringing for a guy who's made his career in the movies, or at least partially in the movies, I should say, in that your mother, who raised you, was not a big fan of movies, or at least some movies.
Well, I don't know, if this was a cultural thing or if it was an economical thing, but there was a theater in my neighborhood in the Lower East Side called 80 St. Mark's, which only showed black and white films. Mm-hmm. Right. And it also turned out that they were $2. And my mother would only let me go see theaters at 80 St. Mark's until I was 12. So I only saw, black and white movies.
Oh, really? So it wasn't like the black and white movies are better than color. It was just that was the only movies that you could afford. It was nearby.
Well, I think it was an issue of money, but my mom swears it was part of my cultural upbringing.
Right. So what was the first color movie you ever saw?
Star Wars.
Oh, that's a good one.
You can imagine how angry I was.
You mean this has been going on? And you didn't
I've been
let me
missing
know?
This. It's very unpleasant.
We have one question for you. We were dying to know. Mm. How annoyed do you get when you type your name into Microsoft Word and it keeps wanting to spell it live?
So annoyed that I moved to Mac.
Really? Because everybody has a burden in life, and we just assumed that was yours.
That is mine, but, it doesn't matter because everyone calls me Leave anyways.
Really?
Yeah. I have the most mispronounced name in show business, I think.
Really? And you've gotten used to it? Do you correct them at this point?
No, I answer to it now.
Really?
But you can imagine how frustrating that is as a young actor to go into a casting office and the first thing they say is Leave.
You're like, no, give me a chance.
Okay, but I've got this really good monologue. Exit. Stage left, even.
Well, Liev Schreiber, we're going to say it right. Liev Schreiber,
thank
we are
you.
So pleased to have you with us. We have invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
Wolverine!
Oh, my God.
So you appear to be in this film about somebody or something who calls himself a Wolverine, but we know the real Wolverines can be found in the classic 1984 movie Red Dawn, about a combined Soviet-Cuban-Nicaraguan invasion of America fought off by a band of Colorado high schoolers led by Patrick Swayze, who call themselves the Wolverines. So we're going to ask you three questions about that classic film. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home answering machine. And we knew you hadn't seen it, of course, because it's in color.
Yeah.
All right. Carl, who is actor Liev Schreiber playing for?
Liev is playing for Daphne Burns of Reno, Nevada.
All right, first question, Liev. Red Dawn, in addition to being arguably the best C. Thomas Howell movie ever made, has another important distinction. What is it? A, it is the only movie that was denounced personally by Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev. B, the Guinness Book of World Records listed it as the most violent movie ever made. Or C, because of this movie, at least 8 high school football teams in Colorado changed their mascot to the Wolverines, just as in the movie.
I'm going to go with Mikhail Gorbachev denounced it.
He didn't. As far as I know, he liked it. Yeah, the Guinness Book of World Records said
most
it was the most violent movie ever made with 2.23 acts of violence per minute of screen time.
I got to see this.
Now, let me just stop for a second and say, yes, you do.
If Gorbachev were to denounce this movie now, would I get that back?
Yes. If you can somehow get him on the phone.
Do you have his number?
I have connections.
Big Wolverine fan.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have two more chances here. Here we go. Now, the movie's auteur, writer, and director John Milius was and is one of Hollywood's most prominent right-wing voices, so he gave himself a fitting cameo role in the movie. What? A, in a scene that was cut from the theatrical release, he appears to Patrick Swayze in a dream as the rebelling Roman slave Spartacus. B, he appears in a picture on a classroom wall as Genghis Khan. Or C, he's the guy with the "You'll pry my gun from my cold dead hand" bumper sticker whose gun is in fact pride from his cold dead hand.
Well, judging from the answer to the first question, I think I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C. He's the guy who "You'll pry my gun." Mm-hmm. That is, in fact, a famous shot in the movie. There's a, you know, and they pry the gun. But in fact, that's not the director. The director is depicted as Genghis Khan on the classroom wall. Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Daphne.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, hang on. You still have one more chance here.
Okay.
The movie has had lasting cultural relevance, as proved by what? A, during the 2008 presidential primaries, Republican candidate Tom Tancredo said, quote, "I'm running so that Red Dawn doesn't turn out to be a documentary," unquote. B, in a 1997 lawsuit challenging the federal assault weapons ban, plaintiff cited the movie as proof of what the law could lead to. Or C, the U.S. Army called their search for Saddam Hussein during the Iraq War Operation Red Dawn.
No, we know that's not true. Okay. I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, Tom Tancredo. He said a lot of great things. He didn't sadly say that. But the U.S. Army did call their operation to find Saddam Hussein Operation Red Dawn.
No.
You see, you know, why do you have actors on this show?
Carl, how did Liev Schreiber do in our quiz?
Peter, he needed at least 2 correct answers to win, but Liev had no correct answers. So no prize for Daphne Burns.
Liev Schreiber, an actor, writer, and director, star of stage and screen, is now playing Sabretooth, Victor Creed, in the new film X-Men Origins Wolverine. It's in theaters everywhere. Liev Schreiber, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paul, we know that the spate of Somali pirates hijacking cargo ships and holding hostages is taking a toll on sailors and sea captains. But according to the Wall Street Journal, it's also causing trouble for whom?
Ports.
No.
Okay. Parrots.
They can't keep up with the number of pirates
anymore. There's not enough of them to go around.
No. Well, perhaps they should have gone into Civil War reenacting instead.
Pirate reenactors.
Pirate reenactors.
I was actually not far off with the pirates.
You weren't far off with the pirates. You were getting there. Life for pretend pirates is already difficult. The fake peg legs are hard in the knees. Parrot feet is expensive. And their fake hand hooks keep puncturing their venti vanilla lattes. And now Somali pirates are giving pirates a bad image. Mark Summers, a man who is also known as
Cap'n Slappy.
No.
He's leading a campaign. He wants to rename the real-life pirates. Call them boat muggers or kelp festooned kidnappers, he says. This seems like a long shot, so we suggest instead renaming the pirate reenactors. Something like Sea Geeks. Or our favorite, Dorkaneers.
Can I just say that all of those are a step up from Captain Slappy?
I know. Charlie, FEMA had hoped to make their website fun and kid-friendly, but after protests last week, they finally decided to stop offering on the website a coloring book that allows kids to color in pictures of what?
Nuclear disaster.
No. Close, though.
Terrorist acts?
Which one?
Not 9/11.
Yes, 9/11.
You're
the
kidding.
9/11
no.
coloring book will no longer be offered via the FEMA website. The coloring book was titled A Scary Thing Happened. And it includes illustrations of airplanes heading toward the flaming Twin Towers. It was available on their website from 2003 until just last week. While FEMA released a sputtering statement promising to review all the material posted under the previous administration, designers of the book stand strong. They say, quote, this is real, quote, it was a very well thought out and useful resource for kids, but it's obviously being misinterpreted by a lot of people, unquote. FEMA also said they would reconsider their other kids' books, including a lovely book about Hurricane Katrina called Where's Waldo Going to Live Now? And a book about nuclear war called Goodnight Everything.
Oh, boy. Oh, we turned a corner. Man. Wow.
Amy, apparently the economic situation is so bad it's beginning to affect the people where? I know. I realized even as I said that.
That
was almost like,
every.
Amy, what am I thinking? I mean, that's really, it's an impossible question to answer.
The people were everywhere.
These are people who normally are just go by every day and in color on Sundays without noticing.
Even homeless people.
No, are without noticing the real world.
In color on Sundays.
Yes.
Oh, the strips?
The comic strips, yeah.
The comic strips.
We're not
biz.
Talking about editorial cartoons or Doonesbury. We're talking about those long-running, sweet and fuzzy strips where nothing ever happens. Even Beetle Bailey, who served through Vietnam and two wars in Iraq without even noticing, is now griping about the economy. Betty and Veronica are talking about shopping to stimulate the economy.
Brenda Starr got laid off, I bet.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And the family circus is selling the children into white slavery. It's terrible.
And Rex Morgan, MD, is now working at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta.
Kathy, though, is going to lose some weight finally. Of course,
finally.
Because she can't afford any food, but, you know.
Finally.
This is how desperate it is. To make rent, Garfield is considering actually being funny.
Ooh.
Charlie, an amazing discovery announced this week at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science right here in Chicago. We're so proud. Researchers found that the same area of men's brains that fires up when they see scantily clad women also lights up when they think about what?
Golf.
No.
Boy, you answered that a little fast, my friend.
Okay, so it's not golf. It's not food.
No.
Obviously. It's not like lawn care products.
No.
It's
why men like to spend so much time browsing through the Sears catalog.
Well, lawn products.
Not necessarily lawn care products.
What, the tools?
Hardware? Yes, tools. Hand tools.
This is going to go in so many bad directions.
The idea of the study is that they scan men's brains, and the same parts of their brains that activate them, they looked at pictures of scantily clad women, is exactly the same area of the brain that goes off when they think about using hand tools.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. No.
Why is this surprise anyone?
Now, the study...
Sometimes an auger is just an auger, Peter.
I know. Now, the study was purported to show that men, in fact,
you are
objectify
really brave,
women.
Right?
Yes, that's true. That's what the study's author said. But we couldn't get past the suggestion that a Makita SP6000 circular saw might be an acceptable substitute for, say, Scarlett Johansson.
That's just sad.
Oh,
you think
really?
It's sad?
Yeah, I mean, as a woman...
Either way,
woman,
with power tools or wives, sometimes you can lose an arm or a leg.
But you know what's interesting is the same study found that as the part of the brain, called the premotor cortex, lights up when it sees pictures of scantily clad women, the part of the brain that deals with communication and empathy shuts down.
Oh, you think?
You think?
You think?
Have you noticed?
Yeah.
You know, man.
Wait,
just...
wait. There's another part of the brain besides the one that lights up when you see skin.
Exactly. You may not have been aware of this, Charlie. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, if that's 1-888-924-8924, or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait@npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, where you can download the Wait Wait podcast, and now you can follow Carl and me and the rest of the Wait Wait crew on Twitter at twitter.com/waitwait. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Pooja from New York, New York.
Hey, Pooja, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
That's a great name, Pooja. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
I like you already with that name. What do you do there in New York?
I work for Sesame Workshop, which are the folks that make Sesame Street.
Yeah?
What do you do? Oh,
yeah.
Yay.
Oh.
Are you felt?
No, I work on our international co-productions in India and Bangladesh.
Oh, so you do like the foreign versions of Sesame Street.
Yes, I do.
Well, welcome to our show, Pooja. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Once again, Carl Castle will recreate three quotes from this week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yep.
Here's your first quote.
Anyone in the White House ever hear of Photoshop?
That was a New York Daily News reporter saying a photo op earlier this week was not just terrifying, it was unnecessary. What was he referring to?
He was referring to a flyover in Lower Manhattan of a decoy Air Force One jet.
Exactly right, the Air Force One New York flyover. On Monday, a jet made up to look just like Air Force One, flanked by a fighter, flew low over Lower Manhattan, evoking memories of 9/11 and sparking panic. Not to worry, it was just a photo op. Mayor Bloomberg said he was furious. President Obama said it was a mistake. But people were like, why do we need, you know, pretty pictures of this airplane? What do they need them for? Well, it turns out that guests on Air Force One are all given little souvenir pamphlets with that photo of the plane. They needed a new one because the old one was so outdated in the old version of the Air Force One publicity photo. Air Force One is, in fact, a stagecoach. It's quite old. Because it was taken a long time ago. You see, the White House is also apparently worried that if the plane did not have a good image, Obama might choose to fly JetBlue to the G20. So you got to compete. Here is your next quote.
As any golfer who has watched his partner shank a short approach knows, it would be absurd to accept the suggestion that the resultant four-letter word uttered on the golf course describes sex or excrement.
That was Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens writing a dissent from the court's 5-4 decision this week about what?
Fleeting expletives on live television?
Exactly right. On your television specifically, I think they talked about you. Fleeting expletives, swearing on TV. In a 5-4 ruling, the court approved the FCC's right to fine broadcasters for swearing on live TV. At issue are the so-called fleeting expletives. These are those curse words that are blurted out, for example, at winners at award shows, sporting events. The acting chairman of the FCC said the court's decision should, quote, reassure parents that their children can still be protected from indecent material on the nation's airwaves. The ruling is a major setback for the planned Fox reality show, Changing Tires on a Busy Road with Rod Blagojevich and Rahm Emanuel.
That's good that they're protecting children from that language on television. They should learn it in schools like they're supposed
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Like we did.
Precisely.
Back in the day.
Here is your last quote.
Four old broads still having sex lives. Who'd have thought it would ever have been made, let alone a hit?
That was an actress remembering her hit show, The Golden Girls. This actress died last Saturday at the age of 86. Who was it?
Bea Arthur.
Right. Bea Arthur. Born Bernice Frankel. Bea Arthur said she, quote, changed the Bernice almost as soon as I heard it. She had great success on both Broadway and television, winning both a Tony Award and two Emmys for roles in Maude and The Golden Girls. She said of her career, quote, after being in the business for such a long time, I've done everything but rodeo and porno, unquote. she wasn't being completely honest. We did a check on IMDb, and back in the early 80s, she did appear in a late-night movie on Cinemax called B. Arthur's Cowpoke. Carl, how did Pooja do in our quiz?
Well, Pooja, you had three correct answers. That's perfect, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead, Peter. He is in first place with 5 points. Amy Dickinson and Paul Provenza are tied for second. Each has 2.
So we flipped a coin. Amy, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Monday was the first day that gay and lesbian couples could get legal marriage licenses in blank.
Iowa?
Right. The Obama administration asked Congress to end disparity in sentences given for crimes involving powdered cocaine versus blank.
Crack.
Right. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said she had grave concerns about a U.S. journalist who was being held in blank.
Iran.
Right. The Lake District in Britain was hit with a very small earthquake this week, so small that a hotel owner said he thought the tremor was blank.
A tempest in a teacup.
No, a large person falling down in the room overhead. Oh. A California woman's claim that her father was the infamous blank killer was greeted with some skepticism.
Oh, the Zodiac.
Right. After retests were performed, 6 athletes from the Beijing Olympics tested positive for blank.
Sesame chicken.
No, doping. 117 passengers were quarantined on board an AirTran flight from Mexico after 2 travelers showed symptoms of swine flu, but it turned out they were blank.
Sleeping.
No, really hungover. When the 2 men reported being nauseated and feverish, health officials went on high alert. They quarantined the passengers. They examined them. They quickly determined the problem couldn't possibly be swine flu because no flu virus on this earth could have survived the huge amounts of alcohol the men had consumed the day before.
It's the old tequila cure.
Yeah. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points, and Amy has taken the lead.
All right, Paul. Paul, you're up next, fill in the blank.
I'm ready.
On Tuesday, the Senate confirmed Kathleen Sebelius as the new Secretary of Blank.
Health and Human Services.
Right. The cook on a ship that was taken over by blanks has filed a lawsuit against the ship owner.
Pirates.
Right. Although appeals from Norm Coleman are still pending, Blank chose a chief of staff for his Senate office.
Al Franken.
Right. On Thursday, officials in Pakistan accused the Blank of holding an entire town hostage.
The Taliban.
Right. After incidents of poking, bullying, cutting in line, and intimidating staff, a British movie theater has reprimanded the rowdy Blanks.
Patrons?
No, not quite.
Huh?
The senior citizens there for a special showing. Miss California told the Today Show that she is going to Washington to campaign against Blank.
Gay marriage.
Right. After falling ill and missing 2 shows, Blank returned to the Tonight Show.
Jay Leno.
Right. A Michigan couple is crediting a psychic with helping them find their chihuahua after their dog Blank last weekend.
Blew away.
Yes. That's right.
Whoa.
A Saturday trip to the Dixieland flea market ended in tears when the beloved Tinkerbell, owned by Dorothy and Laverne Utley of Waterford Township, was carried off by an errant 70-mile-per-hour wind gust. Distraught, the couple consulted, this is all true, a pet psychic. She went, go look in a nearby wooded field, and that's where they found Tinkerbell safe, sound, and yapping at a tree. Quote, you don't know how happy we were, said Mrs. Utley. We love her so much. This heartwarming story might also explain the Great Laredo, Texas Chihuahua Storm of 1906.
Look at the size of those crickets.
Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 16 points
trouble.
And the lead.
You got trouble.
I got trouble.
I got faith in you, Charlie.
How many, then, does Charlie need to win?
6 correct answers.
All right, Charlie. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, British troops ended 6 years of combat operations in blank.
Iraq.
Right. General Motors announced that it would be discontinuing their blank division.
Pontiac.
Right. First Lady Michelle Obama was included in People magazine's annual list of the 100 most blank.
Beautiful people.
Right. Elliot Spitzer says he's a new man, and to prove it, he's now willing to blank. This is according to Newsweek.
He's now willing to get back into politics.
No, he's now willing to be seen in public walking his Bichon Frise. Oh. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad complained this week that even though he'd congratulated him on the election, he hadn't gotten a call from blank.
Barack Obama.
Right. Saying, if you're guilty, I pity that fool. Blank was called but not selected for jury duty
Mr.
here
T.
in Chicago. Yes. A Virginia man whose ice cream truck was stolen was able to find it by blanking.
by listening for the bell down the street.
By following the ice cream truck music. He's right. The ice cream truck driver was selling ice cream from his Blue Bunny van when two armed men took both his clothes and the truck drove off. Story has a happy ending. The driver, accompanied by hordes of grubby, screaming children, was able to track the sound of music to the truck, which had been abandoned just a few blocks away after the thieves had been driven insane by the two. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needed 6 correct answers to win. He had 6 correct answers.
There you are.
So the 17 points. Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Congratulations. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what the headline will be for Obama's next 100 days. And if you at home have a prediction for that, you can tweet it to us at twitter.com/waitwait. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And Scott, taking a green step with Scott's Naturals bath tissues, towels, napkins, and flushable moist wipes at scottcommonsense.com/naturals. And to the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide on the web at fordfound.org. And CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. For the Go-To-Get Right Star Limericks, our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ali Lang. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Belarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the big story out of Obama's next 100 days in office? Paul Prevenza.
President asks for best 200 out of 300.
Amy Dickinson.
President Obama wishes former Vice President Biden all the best in his new career.
And Charlie Pierce.
On the occasion of President Obama's first 200 days, Vice President Joe Biden congratulates the president on a great first 300 days.
Well, if the second 100 days were anything like that panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Paul Prevenza, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.